In 1956, 57, I was in the Kent County Police Force. It was a very unsophisticated force at that time, only having just done the transitional period from borough to county forces. We were very short-staffed but very overworked, and a lot of the policemen in there were reminiscing, or quite often, about their HO, hostility-only duties during the last war as Royal Marines. And also, because I was in Kent, the Royal Marine training establishment was quite close in Deal, and so having sort of seen them and heard a lot about them, that was the main attraction. So, having decided to join, I joined the Royal Marines in November of 1958. It was quite a shock to the system, from being reasonable physical in the police force to being ultra physical in the Royal Marines. But even so, at that particular stage, I still found it quite exciting. I liked the physical outdoor life, and as we went on and became more advanced during the year's training, which was quite long in those days, I quite enjoyed it. Having completed my training, I then did, which was commonly called the learner draft, where I went to Malta, where the unit had recently returned from Cyprus, and this tour of duty was interspersed with visits to North Africa, long-range desert patrols, all very interesting for a beginner at that particular stage. Having come back from the Mediterranean, a short term in the United Kingdom, once again learning the basic trades, doing the standard promotion courses, I found myself out in Singapore in the May of 1962.
Was that when you actually posted to Commando, or when did that happen?
That was my second term in a commando. First one was in 40 Commando in the Middle East in Malta, and this was my second tour in a commando unit. I had recently been promoted to corporal, so this was my new unit, and first time as a corporal. On arrival in the unit, it was at this stage that the
Sorry, could you
transformation.
say?
On arrival in the unit, which was 4-2 Commando Royal Marines, it was at this particular stage that the formations of the unit was changing from the old troop-type formation to the new army-style company formation. And it necessitated quite a change in organisation, because in the troop formation, the sergeants were section commanders, but now in the company formation, the corporals were given much more responsibility, and they then became section commanders. To facilitate the training, we were all dispatched up into jungle warfare schools to do firstly section training, then troop training, and then finally company training, which culminated in a major unit exercise in Malaya, with all the jungle warfare techniques and roles to bring ourselves in line with this organisation.
Stop that.
Having arrived in Singapore and joined 4-2 Commando Royal Marines, I now find myself as a section corporal in charge of 10 men, a new experience for me. A, because of the change in formation and organisation from the old troop formation to now the new company formation. So, in addition to experiencing jungle warfare and the techniques required in this environment, also the new organisation was something entirely new for me as well. My troop sergeant, which was an old style army, sorry, old style
Stop it.
wartime,
All right. Stop it. Say this again.
right. My troop sergeant was a wartime Royal Marine from the landing craft, and it was his first experience virtually on land in the jungle experience. Our sergeant major was a very experienced guy, very interested in football, as I remember, by the name of Cyril Scoynes, who really came to himself when we had a later development in Limbang. The company company commander was a young captain, or shall I say he looked quite young at that stage, called Jeremy Moore, who I later served with many times throughout my career. The personalities you come across, because of the trickle draft system in the Royal Marines, tended to be unique, although I understand it's now changing and spreading towards the army units. It does mean, of course, that you serve, for instance, 18 months or 2 years with a particular person of whatever rank, and you may not see them again for some 10, 12, 15 years later, once again in the same units. It is refreshing to see and to watch how their career has either ended or indeed blossomed in some cases. I have always found that the Royal Marines were very close-knit family affair. There is the obvious inter-army unit rivalry and competitive spirit, and similarly within the Marines there is inter-unit rivalry, for instance between 4-5 Commando, 4-2 Commando, and their luck or their sort of achievements and whatever fluctuates because of the people in there. But once again, you appreciate the actual person, not because of his rank as such, but because you know that he has gone through the same basic training which you have gone through, than that you don't have to test his credibility as such. There's an automatic acceptance until the reverse is proved. It's very difficult, not having been in the Marines, to attempt to explain that to an outsider. But this was very noticeable on quite a few of the engagements or attacks or whatever you wish to call it I've been on, where you have got attachments from other or outside forces, where they are singular to a degree, but are very questioning of the respect we have within ourselves. It's always been the case because it always became a teaching pattern throughout life. Now, just because a company commander is a captain doesn't automatically mean on his first command that he's going to be the bee's knees in command. There is a teaching process, for instance, from the lower echelons or the non-commissioned ranks, whereby a junior officer on his first attachment to a commando is under the auspices of his troop sergeant. Whilst looking at the actual rank structure, one would have assumed the opposite. In fact, it doesn't always happen. The sergeant, who has probably X number of years experience, takes the young officer in hand, and I mean that not literally, but as a training exercise, and teaches him from his own experience. Always allowing the respect of what his rank holds. And similarly, this applies, in my experience as a Sergeant Major, taking a company commander, a new company commander, one has to introduce him. And whilst he could go through the standard DS teaching, which he has, got me here, sorry. Yes, which is the standard format of writing and letters and demi-official or semi-official letters, something. But there is a way of dealing with people which no book can ever tell you, and it's only experience which is very necessary. And generally speaking, Sergeant Majors who have completed something in the region of 18 to 20, 22 years, and indeed some of the older Sergeant Majors, 25 years with war experience. And the company commanders, generally speaking, used to rely heavily upon that experience for their own stature and respect. Sergeant Major, of course, would always ensure that the company gave to the company commander the respect that he deserved, his rank deserved. But there was always this teaching process, and so it went on. So you got to the RSMs, WO1s, went on with the sort of slightly more senior officers, but the way the unit felt, which is why the Royal Marine unit, generally speaking, became a very close family.
I'm now longing to ask whether you, in fact, ever had to tell young officers how to do their job, basically.
Oh, very much so. I spent the last 8 years of my service career as a Sergeant Major, and whereby it was a training session all the time, and with respect. And I think, generally speaking, if you use a diplomatic way of approaching them, which once again you learn from experience, respecting their rank, but also their immaturity. And you showed them and you taught them how to, or the better way of dealing with the ranks. One of the rules in the North Atlantic, when we used to go to Norway every year, was the fact that you'd never get ever parted from your Bergen, which was in fact your lifeline. It had your rations and your sleeping bag, your warm kit, and one never got ever removed from it. And in one classic situation, when the company commander in his orders brought out that we would leave our Bergens for the final attack, one side of the fjord whilst we went across to the other side to complete it. And I remember that as a perfect instance where I was proved right when we nearly lost a number of men in that particular unit, whereby perhaps experience should have taught him that regardless of the weight and the extra and the delay perhaps for the attack, but it is a lifeline which should never be disregarded.
But had you warned him?
Yes, I had warned him, yes. And one never likes to see I told you so, but hopefully that experience went down quite hard.
That's good.
In the December of 1962, in fact, I was looking forward to Christmas. We had just previously come back from Hong Kong, and we were looking forward to a further visit to Hong Kong on one of the aircraft carriers. As it happened, and as per normal, we were duty company. One company was duty throughout the sort of army units with on the island in the event of any emergency arising. And we'd just taken over as duty company when we heard, in fact, that the uprising in Malaya and Borneo had started, and we were just stood by. We had been stood by occasionally beforehand, so it was nothing new to us, and we were once again looking forward to Christmas for a nice trip to Hong Kong, when in fact it got a little bit more serious, and we were all brought back from ashore and kitted up and put on 12 hours standby to move. L Company, because of duty company, then were all called forward and brought forward, which is something new to us once again, to be flown across, because apparently it had now become a major uprising and the rebels had taken over Brunei itself and had held the resident there, I think he was, and captured him anyway, and were holding him to ransom. And there had been a few killings and whatever, so we were on standby to move out, and I remember that well as being the 12th of December, 1962. Mm-hmm. My own section, in fact, joined part of the other two troops, which were flown out to Jesselton. And from Jesselton, we picked up two offshore minesweepers and went up the main Temburong River to Brunei. In the interim period, one other of the troops were actually flown into Brunei airport itself to, in an attempt to recapture it. As I understand it, there wasn't much fighting there anyway, and that was quickly done. So by the time we arrived in Brunei, Brunei was generally speaking secure. We occupied then, to our great pleasure, the Brunei Hotel. Very luxurious for briefings, just lazing around. All of the would-be rebels at this stage had left the town themselves, but apparently the headquarters of the elements, of the Tonku, if I remember that term quite well, although I remember the flag as well, were holed up in Limbang. But this became a little bit difficult to believe when we were fully loaded up with frontline ammunition, with grenades of all types, bandoliers hanging from us, all the automatic weapons. We had an attachment of medium machine guns, the old Vickers guns, which are sadly missing now, as I understand it, from the British forces, and two commandeered lighters, lighters being flat-topped landing craft-type vessels, civilian jobs. And we had two very young officers taken off of the minesweepers, which had accompanied us up the river, to command these vehicles. The plan of attack for Limbang, it being a three-sided square type village on the side of the river, was for one of the craft to go above and land, The second graph to go up slightly later to the lower side of the village and land and do a pincher type movement and put all these rebels down and secure the release of the actual captives.
Right.
So having got completely ammunitioned up, we then, the whole company of L Company of 4-2 Commando, then scampered onto these two boats, or landing craft, as you will. We were fortunate in that the one I was on still had two large tractors embarked, and it was decided not to disembark them because they could set up, if it was so decided or found necessary, as a little bit of protection, because the gunwales, or to explain, the sides of the boats were no more than about 18 inches to 2 foot high at the very sides. So embarked with the whole company. It was in the late evening because we were going to do a dawn attack, whereas is in all marine terminology, we always attack at dawn whenever the sort of dawn is, but it's always a dawn attack. And the idea being that we motored up to within about a mile of this particular village, laid up during the night, I mean put into the shore and just keep quiet, and then get into position ready for the actual dawn attack in the morning. The Vickers machine guns, as I have mentioned, we had one to each boat, and the idea being they were going to give the firepower, because if anybody has heard these particular weapons at close range, they are quite frightening with their sound of fire. And so we left, and I can remember vividly also laying up with mosquito all around us all that night, but as is what the wont in the jungle, and one quickly adapts to this. Light in the Far East arrives, generally speaking, at a certain time, as does sunset, and so it could be synchronised quite easily as to what time we were going to arrive. The front craft, on approaching Limbang itself,
now, I'm going to stop you there as we come to the end of this particular tape.
So right.
I also